Alright everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. Today I have with me a good buddy of mine, Lee McCormick. Lee is an author, a skills coach, and also runs a very well-known website known as called LeeLikesBikes.com. Lee is literally the guy who wrote the book on skills training, Mastering Mountain Bike Skills with Brian Lopes. And give you guys a little bit of background on him. His background is actually not in mountain biking originally. I'll let him get into a little bit, but Lee's actually one of them smart guys. He got him a Pulitzer Prize for his work in, what were you doing that got you a Pulitzer Prize there, Lee?
Hey everybody, hey James. I worked for a long time in a daily newspaper, and although I was a writer, my main job, I did informational graphics. So I was one of those guys where if a plane crashed, I was the guy who drew the part of the engine that failed, you know, like the diagrams and the maps and charts and stuff. So it's kind of like half writing, half drawing, and it's sort of a way of thinking. So anyway, in 1997, there were these huge floods in the Midwest, and, you know, huge areas flooded, and I used to work for a big newspaper chain, and basically one of the towns where they had a newspaper flooded, then burned down both.
Yikes.
They basically vowed to keep the newspaper publishing for all these displaced people. So they took, they had like 30 papers around the country, and they handpicked kind of a team of badasses. And I was just sitting there one day, picking my nose, and they flew me out, you know. So I helped them cover that story. And I didn't actually write, I did infographics. So infographics are all about, you know, explaining the essence of something in pictures and getting people to understand things in just an instant, like really complicated ideas sometimes. In a way that's easy to understand. So we all as a team did a good job, and as a team we all won the Pulitzer for public service.
Oh, cool, man, cool. So very good. That's actually the first time I've heard that story. So I knew you had a Pulitzer Prize, but I never actually knew it exactly what for. So that's pretty cool, man.
Funny. Oh, thanks, man. Like, you know what's funny is, like, at the time I was also an expert class downhill racer, and I got the Pulitzer, and I was like, I don't care. I just want to win a race. Like, I didn't even give a shit. I was just still trying to figure out how to ride my damn bike faster, you know? It's pretty funny.
Nice, man. Well, that actually brings us to, you know, to what most people know you for here in the industry, and that is, you know, besides being a skills coach, which we'll get into here in a little bit, is the book that you did with Brian Lopes, Mastering Mountain Bike Skills. And I just have to compliment you right up front. It's a great book. When I got my hands on it, one of my clients actually brought it to my attention when I'd mentioned your name to her after I'd seen your website, and looking through it, I can tell you from experience, you know, being a strength coach, I've read a lot of manuals, a lot of different books and stuff, and there's definitely an art to making complex subjects understandable to most people. And you wouldn't think about it, but what makes a bike go and corner and handle in the air is all physics and very complex concepts, and your book does a really great job of breaking that down to a very understandable level for people to be able to kind of figure out how they can take their bike riding to the next level. Great resource. Highly recommend that everybody check your book out. But just wanted to get a little background info on that book. Like, what was the inspiration for that book? What prompted you to sit down and put in that time and effort in the creation of that book?
Well, thanks for the nice comments, by the way. Yeah, that thing, that's the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life, man. It about killed me. Like, I was so stressed out during the book that I gave myself a case of the shingles, which is your dormant, I didn't even know what this thing was. It's your dormant chickenpox virus, and under times of extreme stress, it'll erupt on your skin. And, dude, I'm a mountain bike racer, and I've been hurt. And I'm telling you what, shingles is the greatest pain I've felt in my entire life. Nonstop for 3 weeks, dude. So anyway, that's a little bit about that. So, but anyways, so like I mentioned, I have a background in journalism, right? And I've been writing and doing infographics, and, you know, for years and years. And I also worked at an internet company. I did a bunch of information architecture stuff. So, like, little did I know, I was training myself how to explain things. And I was refining my art form, which is words, pictures, diagrams, everything, right? And at the same time, I've been a mountain biker since, you know, for almost 20 years now, you know. And I started off, when I started riding bikes, I was like 210 pounds. I was fat, out of shape. I've been on Weight Watchers, Fit for Life, all that garbage. And when I started riding bikes, it just redefined my life. And it became my passion, you know. So the triathlete, a roadie, finally a mountain biker. And I had all these careers, you know, with the newspaper. I got my Pulitzer. I won a bunch of other awards. Then I went to the internet. I started making an amount of money that I thought would be cool. You know, it was like a lot of zeros, but it wasn't. I was getting more and more miserable, and I'd always had this sense. I did not know what it was, James, but I'd always had this sense that I was destined for something different. Like, I did not know what. Something special, something unique. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And I loved bikes. And I just was like, man, like, there's this movie. If you guys haven't seen the movie Whale Rider, you got to see it. This independent movie about this girl who ends up being the chief of the tribe against everybody's, you know, beliefs. And the movie's about fate. And I'll tell you right now, James, I'll try not to cry when I tell you this story. But I'd already been really frustrated, and I was ready for something different. And I didn't know what. I saw that movie. Halfway between that movie, I was bawling. I was crying openly. I felt like a tiny speck of a human. And I thought that God sent a lightning bolt to me and said, Lee, look at this movie. It's about fate. It's about purpose. So I quit my job a week later, and I was making what most people consider a pretty ridiculous amount of money, you know, working for an internet company. And I just, no severance, nothing, I just quit. And then I went out and I raced, you know, and by halfway through the season, I realized I know what I want to do. I want to write the book, you know. And so I decided to write the book, and so I had grown up with Lopes. Like, he and I, like, I took him on his first mountain bike ride back in the late 80s. Like, he had won a mountain bike at a BMX race. So believe it or not, I used to wax that guy uphill. I remember, you know. So anyway, I hadn't heard from Lopes in like 2 years. I decided I wanted to write the book. I tried to do the book with somebody else, but he flaked out on me. One day the phone rings, Lopes, out of the blue. Hey, Lee, what's up? Oh my God, Brian, I want the book. He's, dude, I'll study. Done, dude. 2 weeks later, we started it. And the rest is history. And I got to tell you, man, like, not to sound all foo-foo spiritual on you, but that writing that book, like I said, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. It took everything I had, like all the experience I had for daily newspapers, magazines, working in a big corporation, like everything I'd done, it took everything I had plus to finish that book. And I'm really proud of it, dude. It came out really good.
Excellent, man.
There you go.
Yeah, no, you know, it's funny, I can totally relate to what you're talking about with that, you know, because even though I'm still in the fitness industry, you know, I got so sick and tired of basically dealing with, you know, your average overweight Mrs. Jones, who is your typical training client, and just burning me out and wasn't happy with it. And actually before I moved here to Fruita, which is where I had the pleasure of making your acquaintance when you came through town, I was living in Tyler, Texas, and a lot of people ask me, you know, what the heck I was doing in Tyler, Texas, and I tell them I don't know either. So, but anyway, that's a subject for another story. But I was managing a health club, and, you know, I was in the same position. I was making a pretty decent living for, you know, not an overly strenuous job, and I was just miserable, hated every moment of it. And then just kind of the inspiration came to me for the, you know, the MTB strength training system, just kind of creating something for my fellow mountain bike riders. And, you know, you're totally right. When, you know, it's funny how your life experience kind of sets you up for things like this. I mean, everything that had been, you know, part of my, you know, my career up to that point, you know, being a fitness author, you know, just all the studying and reading and everything that I'd done just kind of all came together for the creation of the MTB strength training system. So, man, now I completely understand what you're talking about. I think there's a lot of other people out there listening that understand that, and a lot of other people that can take a lesson from hearing my story. You know, if you're miserable with what you're doing and you have a passion for something, you know, you only live once. You know, you may as well take that plunge and you know, see where it takes you.
You gotta, dude. You gotta pin it. Like, you can. If there's a double jump, and you kind of hit it half-ass, you will not clear it. I guarantee. Right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So some, you just got to freaking go for it and pump it and rock it. And if you come up short, sometimes you come up short, you know, but you're never going to land that thing and feel that up on the backside of that jump unless you pin it, you know. And I can go on and on and on and on and on about this. But I'll tell you, man, if you have a passion, rock it. And dude, I spent my whole life almost compromising and doing things I thought I was supposed to do. All it got me was dissatisfaction. The more I commit to my heart, the better it gets. End of speech, man.
Yeah. No doubt, man. No doubt. I completely understand. So, anyways, man. So cool. Well, let's you know, as far as the book goes, like I said, you know, great resource there, and you know, you also do a lot of skills coaching now.
Yep.
And
yep.
So, you know, how did that, you know, exactly come about? I mean, was this something that you were doing and then you wrote the book, or was this kind of an offshoot of the book, or you know, how exactly did you go from, you know, working in informational graphics and winning a Pulitzer Prize to teaching people how to ride faster on their mountain bikes?
It's funny, huh, dude? Well, you know, I never set out to be a coach. And to tell you the truth, I didn't think I had the patience for it, you know? And after the book, I started talking, you know, around and this and that, and I realized that, you know, every other sport, a real sport, has a curriculum.
Yeah.
If you want to learn how to ski or scuba dive or even golf or play tennis, they know how to teach that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I realized that in our sport, there just isn't that level of sophistication. And there are people coaching, and some of them do a good job, some of them don't. It's really haphazard, you know. So I took it on. I took on the project of creating that curriculum. And I took it on purely as like an information design problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I never saw myself actually teaching it. So again, right, that whole experience, like of explaining things and infographics and all the craziness I've done, I decided to apply that brain, you know, and like I've designed huge websites and stupid stuff and software. So I decided to apply that like rigorousness, you know, like that intellectual rigorousness to bike riding.
Right.
And my plan was to create this curriculum and then form an association of skills instructors, like the PSIA for skiing, you know, to start that process. And so I went through totally analytical, you know, and like I know so much more about riding now than I did when I finished the book. It's not even funny. Like I'm starting to see the book as just the beginning for me. And so I created a skills tree, and everything you can do on a bike, anything you can think of, like say doubling into a corner, is in that tree. That's really high on the tree. And every skill in the tree has prerequisite skills until you get down to the trunk of the tree. You know, so I created this structure where I can get anybody. Like, and I work with pros, I work with 50-year-old housewives, everybody. And everybody starts at the bottom of the tree, and we work our way up. You know, so it's like a totally, really analytical way to do it. And it's like, you know, there are a lot of people who ride bikes really well. There's some people who teach it okay, but no one's addressed it this way before. So I completed it, and I was about ready to start publishing it, and I thought to myself, well, dude, you never even taught anybody before. You should probably try it out. You know what I mean? Just to see if it works, because it looks good on paper, right, James?
Oh, yeah.
So I got a job working with this youth group called SMBA, Simba, in Boulder, and I was their coach for the whole summer. That's like probably 50, 60 kids I worked with that summer. And then I started testing it out and refining it. And then from that, I grew, like, well, the parents were like, oh, my God, teach us. And then their friends were like, teach us. And then racers are approaching me going, dude, like my friend Zach Griffith, he's been a semi-pro for like 3-4 years. He's like, dude, I want to go pro, help me. So I coach him. Now, guess what? He's a pro, you know. He doesn't crash anymore. He pins it.
Right.
So it was really organic. And, like, not to sound frou-frou too much, but, dude, I turned out I love it. I love it. And it's a way to use my brain and my heart in a way that really, really helps people a lot. I mean, you get it from training people.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's like the highest level of service I can think of. So over the years, it's grown. So I coach a junior team that runs out of a fixed bike shop in Boulder. We have like 13 kids now. I'm working with a lot of the teams in the mountain states because I'm just telling you, like, there are other coaches out there, and that's great. But like I have proven results. If you work with me, you're safer and faster, period. So I work with like the fixed team, I work with Yeti RPM, I work with Full Tilt, Team Kozos, like all the major teams. You know, most of the major teams in the mountain states work with me now because they know it works. And then also tons of private clients. And it's just purely organic, dude. It just came, not to sound crazy, but it came from the universe. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Now I have an even better idea of how to coach and how to teach. And I'm getting ready, like, within a matter of weeks to start shooting the how-to DVD.
Nice.
The DVD will be, like, taking a lesson from me. And it'll be really fun to watch. There'll be good writing in it. And it'll teach you the drills. And it'll be really fun. Plus, since I'm anal and I'm an information designer by trade, it's going to be totally flexible. So you'll be able to go in there and go, dude, I want to do drops. And I'll tell you, okay, well, here are the 5 prerequisite skills in order to do drops. And so if you can do these 5 things, you can drop anything safely. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that. And, like, the book blew doors, dude, on the other books out there. Because it's not just words, it's pictures, too.
Right.
And the book has already doubled the sales of Ned Overend's book, which was better. Which was the bestseller. And we're in 4 languages now, and we're killing it. So I expect that the DVD is going to do the same thing for the current DVD market. It's just going to blow doors, man.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely,
yeah,
man.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Well, I'm excited to check that out. I mean, I had a chance to work with you for about, like, 25 minutes or so when you came up for me to get you set up on a program and just kind of talk some shop. And you definitely opened my eyes to a lot of things that I wasn't even aware that I was doing. You know, I mean, I'm definitely no pro rider, but I'm better than than a lot of people out there on the trail. But you definitely showed me how I could, you know, take that up a notch, and so I can definitely attest to that fact that, you know, anybody gets a chance to work with Lee, you'll definitely come away from it with a much better understanding of how to ride your bike and how to really get the most out of it. And it actually kind of brings me to a little side rant that I know that you share this sentiment, but it would definitely behoove anybody listening to this to at least, you know, check out your book, look into some sort of skills coaching, you know, on your site. You know, you even said, you know, give the name to some other people if they're not in the area that you are in. You know, there are some other skills coaches out there that do a good job and that you acknowledge, so they can check out on your site and see who that is. But you know, I kind of coined this phrase not too long ago that, you know, just because you own a mountain bike doesn't make you a mountain biker. And, you know, so learning how to ride your bike, learning how to do it safely, learning how to get the most out of it is going to really enhance your enjoyment so much more than, you know, a carbon fiber handlebar or something like that. In fact, you know, you got a really good example that you've given about, you know, somebody that had called you and was debating whether to take your camp or buy a new wheel set. You know, why don't you share with us, you know, kind of your response when somebody asks you that?
Yeah, totally, dude. Well, you know, I mean, most of us have a hard on for new equipment, right? So yeah, I had a guy. I've had this a lot of times. People are like, dude, you know, I have X dollars. Should I buy a wheel set or should I, you know, come take a clinic with you? And of course, I'll say take a clinic. You know, but I'm anal. So I want to prove it numerically. So I have a spreadsheet, and it's pretty sick. And it basically tells you, like, as you change different components of your bike, the weight of them, how it affects your riding. And I can tell you, like, I can prove to you, mathematically anyway, that $300 wheel set, even if it's a pound lighter, which is a big deal, over the course of a ride, even a downhill ride, it's negligible. It's like less than 1% benefit, you know? It's like... like, it feels different, but by the time you figure, maybe you weigh 150, 200 pounds, by the time you figure that pound into that weight, it's almost negligible. So maybe it's 1% improvement. Good for you, right? And if you're low, yeah, dude, 1% is important. So rock it, you know? But like, when I teach people to ride their bikes, we do a standard figure eight drill, and I time it. And most people, okay, before they take the clinic, it takes them 3 seconds per turn. Within an hour, I will get you down to 2 seconds per turn, okay? So basically, that's a 33% improvement right there per corner. And for a pro racer, I can get even more of an improvement. So what I'm telling you is, sure, 1% benefit from your wheel set, cool. But to learn how to corner safely, forget not crashing. Just being able to carry more speed, dude, 10, 15, 20% improvement, you know, for downhill. And so, yeah, it's a big deal. And, you know, I happen to believe that I do a pretty damn good job. But like you said, there are other coaches out there who do a good job too, you know. And I think, I mean, you wouldn't, if you had a kid and you wanted to put him on skis, you'd put him in ski school, you know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't put on a freaking, well, scuba is a bad example. You wouldn't go scuba diving without his lesson, you know. So, but
yeah.
You know, James, to circle back to you, right, like, you're a good rider. Like, I rode with you. We did a really technical cross-country ride. You're strong. You know what you're doing, right? So you're a really good candidate. But I'm able to, I showed you, like, what, three things?
Yeah, yeah. You,
like,
you opened my eyes.
Three little things.
Three little things.
That were different. And
yep.
That's it, right? It totally unlocked a whole bunch for you, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Just really, really opened my eyes to a couple things. But, man, that's actually a really good question for you now, though. Is, you know, I like to try and give people some really solid take-home advice from these interviews. But, you know, what is your top piece or couple pieces of advice for people, you know, that they could go and put into practice next time they jump on a bike? And you know, see, and kind of improve their riding abilities.
Okay, well, that's a great question, dude, and I'll share some freebies with you. The first thing is this: like, you look at dudes riding, and you think, like, most of us get the idea that you control a mountain bike with muscle. You know, you see these dudes with their gnarly tattoos and stuff, and they look burly, right? And so you think it's about being muscular and strong. It isn't. It's about balance. It's about grace, okay? So that's the number one thing. So following that, right, your bottom bracket is basically right in the middle of your bicycle, okay? So if you ride with all of your weight on your feet, I'm talking no weight whatsoever on your hands, your hands should be floating, that automatically distributes your weight, like, basically 50-50. On a downhill bike, it's like 60% in the back. It's basically 50-50. So I'm telling you that's how your bike is designed to be ridden. So whatever you do, this is like any other sport, skiing, yoga, bull riding, which I've done, horseback riding, anything, like, cultivate the sense of balance between basically your belly button and your pedals. And as long as you stay on your pedals and keep the weight there and keep your hands light, your bike will ride so much better.
Yeah.
So anytime you feel any pressure on your hands at all, you're too far forward. Feel any pulling on your fingers, you're too far back. And so riding on rough terrain is a constant adjustment, and you're constantly regulating that balance. That's it. If you can do that, I don't care if you come up short on a jump, fly into a rock garden, hit a patch of sand, I don't care what happens, you'll be cool. That's my advice.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely the first thing that you pointed out to me, you know, that I tended to lean too far forward. And, you know, it's funny, I didn't even think about it until you pointed it out, but you know, you can literally ride your bike without your hands. I mean, the geometry of your bike will steer itself, and you can, you know, lean and actually turn your bike without any hands on the handlebars whatsoever. And so, you know, if you've got pressure on your handlebars, you're actually interfering with your bike's built-in geometry and having it steer itself. So, you know, that was kind of an eye-opening thing for me, man. Something that, you know, I think if people, you know, put into practice next time they hit the trail, they'll definitely find their riding to improve a little bit there. So, so excellent, man. Well, thanks.
Can I throw out a little story?
Yeah, definitely.
And so I've been practicing that, you know, now for a few years. So now for me, it's ingrained. So, like, say I'm on the motocross track on my moto, and I overshoot a jump, I'm going to, whatever, 20, 30 feet in the air, and I know I'm going to hit a flat bottom. It's so ingrained that what I do in midair is, like, I'll open my fingers. Like, where are my feet? So I'll open my fingers up, find my feet, and I'm cool. And today, I had a meeting in downtown Denver, so I was pinning it on my P3 with my feet all the way up, just friggin' going through traffic. Dot, 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 dot. Really, lots of, you know, great train tracks, the whole deal, right? And I came into a situation where a bunch of cars were slowing down and turning and doing weird nuts about me, and I noticed myself, I got into my attack position, I noticed myself opening my fingers. So it's like, it's so ingrained for me now that anytime I'm under any stress or anything's going on, I automatically find my feet. So if it can work for me, it can work for anybody.
Yeah, definitely. Like Mr. Miyagi said, you know, balance good, karate good, balance bad, karate bad, might as well go home. So it's
nice, dude. And paint the fence, dude. And you know what? That's so neat. So like doing the drills in the book and on my site and in the video is totally like painting the fence and waxing the car, dude.
Yeah.
The more you do that, the better you ride.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, it's funny. You and I both, you know, take such a similar approach to what we do as far as, you know, and really the best example that, you know, people kind of visualize what we're, you know, the approach we take is, you know, martial arts, as far as, you know, everybody has to start at white belt level and learn certain skill sets, and then the next belt builds on those skill sets and then builds on those and then builds on those. And, you know, the way that most mountain bikers go about learning how to ride is like basically jumping in the octagon and fighting and trying to figure out, you know, how do I become a better at this through just getting their butt kicked. And, you know, they spend so much time trying to survive, they don't ever learn how to ride their bike any better. So,
it's so true. And you know what else? Like, you go in the octagon and you get your face smashed in a few times, and what you do is you learn how to avoid getting your face smashed, but you don't learn how to fight.
Yeah.
You learn how to avoid being hurt. So, like, all that tension, like 100% of mountain bikers, when they get scared, they have the same thing. They raise their shoulders, they tighten up. Well, guess what? That might save you from dying, but it does not help you ride your bike. And the stuff that we train is basically the opposite, you know? So, you're right, dude. And you know what? To your point with your weight training, you know, I came to you, like, I have a degree, a minor in exercise physiology, right? And I've been training my whole life, so I thought I knew some stuff. Right? Well, guess what, you guys? I go to James's. He's like having me do the stupidest little tricks. And what I realized was I thought I was a black belt, but no, I'm not a black belt. Like, I'm a black belt, like, in some things, I'm a white belt in others. So James has brought me back to the white belt level, and he basically tore me down, and he's building me back up to be a better lead.
Yep. And that's kind of what I'm doing on my skill side there. So, well, cool, yeah, man.
We're trading, man.
We're trading off, exactly. It's a mutually beneficial thing here. So shoot, man, before I let you off, though, I want to ask you about one last thing. The Pump Track Nation, you are kind of the godfather of this movement here. So I want to ask you, what exactly is the Pump Track Nation, and you know, what is the deal with that?
Dude, it's so crazy, man. Like, you want to talk about cosmic stuff. Like, I think the original Pump Tracks, well, I know, were like really late 70s, early 80s when BMX took off. People would build stuff like that in their yards. And a pump track, by my definition, so I get to make up the definition, right? So I get to make it up. So it's just a loop. And it could be a figure eight, it could be anything, but the basic thing is it's a loop, and it's all rollers and berms. And you can ride the thing by pumping. You don't have to pedal. So, like, a good pump track, like, I was at Mark Weir's the other day. Holy cow. You know, like, mine in my backyard that I used to have, you can get going over 20 miles an hour without turning a pedal. And you can go fast enough to double jump, triple jump. They're insane, dude. And they're safe to ride. They're easy to get around. And so, like, any goofball can get around one, you know, like moms and dads, little kids. But they have an infinite curve for improvement. So you can get going faster and faster and faster. Pretty soon you're manualing, you're doubling, you're double manualing. Like, they're really infinitely adjustable. And now, like, we're doing a lot of fun things with corners. So you can have these, like, really fun S sections. Or at Lowry State Park, we call it the snail. I don't know if you can visualize this, but you come in into a berm and it tightens up a full 360 degrees, and you jump over the berm you just rode. And then you do the same thing the other way. I mean, it's infinite, the possibilities, right? So anyway, the first modern one that we know of was in one of the Earth movies. Nick Hanna built it at his house in Australia. And so Steve Wentz, he's a local Colorado pro downhill guy, he built one of the six in Boulder. And so we started riding it, and I started publicizing it on my site. And I put up the plans for it. Next thing I know, people are copying that, building their own. I built one in my house, I published those plans. Next thing I know, from my site, people are building pump tracks all over the world. Like, there are soldiers in Iraq. I don't know where they get the time for this. They're building pump tracks on their installations and their bases, you know? They're all over. So I wrote this an ebook, Welcome to Pump Track Nation, that has all the specs, everything you need, including liability waivers and stuff. And about 2,000 of those things have been downloaded so far.
Nice.
It's global, and it just it strikes a chord, dude. We built one in a state park, dude. We're gonna build one in a couple weeks. There's this guy. I just got this assignment. He's one of the. He's the guy who wrote the Oracle database for Oracle. Multi-zillionaire. We're building one at his house, which is cool. But this is the funny thing, dude. He's like, okay, it's all good, but I have to have space to land my helicopter in the middle of the track.
I bet you haven't gotten that request too often.
I mean, that's hysterical. So you got a guy at that level who's like, he's not really a rider. He just wants to have one, you know? And so, you know, I've been approached to build one at the Olympic Games in 2012. It's taken off, dude. It's just like, I think it fits people's idea of mountain biking. They're fun. You can have a barbecue. You can have your kids, your mom. You can fully rip it. You can race on them. There's so much you can do, and we've only seen the beginning, dude. I mean,
nice.
I gotta estimate. Well, there's at least one for every pump track book that's been downloaded. That's 2,000, plus everybody else who's building them without the pump track book.
Yeah.
So within like 2 years, it's gone from probably a handful in the world to thousands.
Nice. Yeah, that's
anywhere.
That's cool, man. I haven't had a chance. I mean, looking on your site, I saw the book. I saw some. In fact, there was a guy in Santa Barbara that had taken up half his backyard, and this should kind of give everybody an idea. You know, you don't need a ton of room for this, which is one of the things that makes it so attractive for a lot of people, is it doesn't take a ton of room to put in a decent pump track. But, you know, this guy in Santa Barbara, who obviously had a very cool wife, had allowed him to take out half of his backyard and put in a pump track. But I haven't actually had a chance to do a pump track. We were talking, we got kind of a natural one here, Kessel's Run in Fruta, which is probably like one of the most pump worthy trails in the world anywhere, but still want to get one in. And actually, I don't know if I've mentioned this to you yet, but our friend Ryan Cranston with MRP, who's located here in Fruta, they have a lot next to their facility, and they are wanting to put in a pump track. So we're going to have to consult you when that time
comes.
Yeah,
actually, I've been talking to Cranston, and he's excited about it, man.
Yeah, cool.
Book, and we're going to, whenever I get time, I'm going to come down there and help him design something.
Yeah, I'm excited,
too. Sky's the limit.
Yeah, but the, you know, definitely recommend anybody who's like, man, yeah, that's a good idea. Go check out Lee's site. You know, he's got a ton of great free info there. You know, the pump track book is great. There is a lot of good free info there, but I would definitely recommend if you're wanting to put something in, you know, $10 for the book is a minor investment. I mean, I've mentioned this to you before, Lee, but you know, I've been involved in building some dirt jump areas, and nothing sucks worse than spending an entire day digging and sweating and digging some more, and then realizing at the end of the day that what you just built don't work. And
yeah.
So, you know,
holy.
Yeah, so your book cuts down on that learning curve immensely.
Yeah.
You know, you'll know for sure that whatever you just installed, you're going to be able to ride and not have to redo it.
Cuts through all that stuff. Like, you have to experiment, you know?
Yeah, cool. And there's, what, like 10 different designs or something in that book that you have?
Something like that, yeah. Like, I've got, you know, like I did general specs, like for how things should be spaced, and I think there's 8 or 10 sample designs, and of course, some people just copy one, but most people end up doing something different, you know, especially
yeah.
If you have a yard that has trees or whatever, you know, you work around the trees, you know, you can rock it, and it's like the book tells you, like, how far rollers should be spaced and how tall they should be, which is really important, and it tells you, like, what radius turns work the best. So it's almost like Legos. Like, once you understand those components, then you can put them together however you want, you know?
Cool, man. Cool. Excellent. Well, shoots, Lee, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to sit down and do this interview. I'm sure everybody got some great info out of this. And, you know, definitely recommend everybody listening to this go check out LeeLikesBikes.com. A lot of great info there. And you know, his book and his pump track ebook. Are great resources, but you know, just kind of a reoccurring theme with a lot of interviews that I've done and a lot of my writings is, you know, take some time and invest in yourself, invest in the rider, invest in the engine that drives your bike, and you're going to have an infinitely more enjoyable time. So shoot,
that's awesome, James. Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Anything else you want to end on or throw out there for the people?
Well, I guess I'll go back to this idea, man. And this applies on your bike or off your bike. If you love something and you want it, dude, you know, make sure you're prepared. Make sure you're strong. Make sure your bike is working. You know, don't be dumb about it. Make sure you're prepped. That's all I say to pin it, dude, because you'll be amazed at what you can accomplish. You know, that's the end of that speech right there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, cool. Well, once again, this has been James Wilson with MTV Strength Training Systems and Lee McCormick with LeeLikesBikes.com. Until next time, signing off.
Right on, brother. Catch you later.